Welcome to the Mad Tech Podcast from ExchangeWire, bringing you the latest news and views from the world of ad tech, media, and marketing.
Hello and welcome to the Mad Tech Podcast. I'm your host for today, Amy Newell-Tarine, ExchangeWire editor, and I'm delighted to welcome our guest for this episode, Joris Knetsch, EVP at Pros on Pixels, APAC by Havas. Could you give us a little intro into Pros on Pixels, Joris?
Hello, everyone. I'm very happy to be here. And yes, of course. So Pros on Pixels is the sort of the global content at scale network for Havas. And we built it sort of 3 years ago to address the marketing challenges that we face today. You know, similar or lower budgets, more content, high quality content. And so we've consolidated multiple studios that we had internally and sort of are superpowering that with the use of automation and AI. So today that's Pros on Pixels. I joined not too long ago to set up the Pros on Pixels business in Asia Pacific. Been in Asia for about 8 years, and with Pros on Pixels for coming up three quarters of a year. So yeah,
great, thanks, nice. Joris. Yeah, how's your week going so far?
Yeah, not too bad, not too bad. I mean, business wise, really good. The weather cleared up here in the afternoon. It's a beautiful sunny Thursday afternoon. So yeah. I think it's pretty good. How's yours?
Nice. Yeah, it's a nice day here too as well, actually, which it wasn't so nice yesterday. So good to have a bit of sun back again.
Awesome.
And we're also here with Lindsay Rowntree, COO at ExchangeWire. How are you, Lindsay?
I'm good, thank you. Good to be here.
Yeah, good to have you back. Yeah, it's our first pod together since before your maternity break. So
it is. Yep, yep. Mm. Exciting times.
Yeah, looking forward to the discussion.
Definitely.
So today we're bringing you an AI special. We'll be discussing Sora's OpenAI, the US sounding alarm bells over DeepSeek, and new AI regulations in China. So for our first story, OpenAI will be introducing controls allowing content rights holders to dictate how their characters are used in Sora, its AI video generation tool. Copyright owners such as TV and movie studios will be able to block the use of their characters. OpenAI also intends to share some of the revenue generated with rights holders who want their characters generated by users. It said implementation would begin soon, although the exact model would take a bit of trial and error to figure out. Joris, I'll come to you first. Can you imagine many content rights holders wanting their characters to actually be remade by Sora? What do you think?
Yeah, I think we need to sort of distinguish between people and brand IP, for that matter. But yeah, imagine you as a person. You log on to Sora and you've uploaded your cameo and then everyone and their dog is able to recreate you in AI. I think that's not something that I want personally. But it does open up an interesting conversation about, you know, royalties and new streams of revenue. But I think it's important for everyone to do that voluntarily. So yes, to be able to control that. I think there is a lot of commotion about Sam Altman, who's created a cameo with himself, and people obviously started to do fun things with him. I think the best one was, I hope Nintendo doesn't sue us, amongst others. But yeah, I think as a private person, you know, got to be able to be careful. But yeah, I think as brands, there could be benefits to it. But even as private individuals, there could be benefits to it, as it could open up new streams of revenue.
Yeah, that's a good point. Lindsay, what are your thoughts there?
Yeah, so as I understood this, this refers specifically to characters rather than the people and the rights holders of characters. Because, and again, Joris, to your point about the camera characters and the cameo, I've seen a lot of the Sam Altman cameos and videos that have been made as well. Another one I saw, another person that's given his rights up is the delightful influencer Logan Paul. And I keep seeing videos. I was watching some the other day and they were showing videos of him, people using his likeness or his image for kind of doing nail painting demonstrations or kind of makeup, like get ready with me makeup demonstrations. And it's very strange seeing like just load this what looks like exactly like Logan Paul, the fighter and influencer, doing his makeup. And it's a really, really odd thing. But I think the influencers like him will get involved with this because they want to be able to kind of promote the future. And obviously there will be some kind of monetary benefit to them, I'm assuming, down the line. And that's kind of why they're getting involved so quickly. And they don't seem to have the same cares and worries about their image rights that you or I might have, and kind of how our images are used. And I think from the kind of the character side of things, you know, I think it raises a lot of questions. They refer to being able to rights holders of these characters being able to opt out, but kind of what does that look like? And if they're opting out, kind of how is the character being generated? When they opt out, will they actually block for training data from actually being able to kind of create the character in the first place? Or will they block the character after it's been detected, after someone's created it and then detect it? And does it affect like multiple generations of character? For example, you know, season one, Homer Simpson looks very, very different from season, 457, Homer Simpson? I don't know how many seasons there are of The Simpsons. It's quite a lot now. But like, so will it detect every single version of a character? They talk about a revenue sharing model. And again, who will that benefit? Will it? I sort of kind of like think about this as like a bit like Google News and the long tail publishers, the publishers that needed the revenue kind of had to basically play whatever game Google wanted to play when it came to them being able to kind of continue to kind of get traffic onto their site and monetize their site through footfall, through traffic. I wonder if this would be similar, because if you're a Disney character, you're probably going to opt out of this. If you're Disney, you're going to opt your characters out of it. They don't need the traction that they get a lot of money licensing their characters across all different types of things. I've got a recent like new baby, and I'm realizing that every single shop in the world seems to have Disney licensed baby clothes. So Disney are doing well out of that. They do not need or want to have their character being regenerated by people that could do anything with it. But if you've got, I mean, I could be wrong about that, but I would say if you've got like an indie character and the ability to be able to kind of get for it to gain traction and kind of gain notoriety through being used in different ways and kind of almost kind of creating sort of fan fiction out of it, that could be really interesting and exciting. And also if there's a rev share model, a way of this, the rights holder of these indie characters to be able to get more revenue, but it might then mean they are beholden to OpenAI and beholden to Sora. And if they choose to opt out, they're going to miss out and not get the same traction. And that makes me think of Google News and the Google News model. A lot of ranting there. I hope that all made sense.
I think the opt-out model, though, you can imagine that in some cases the damage will already be done, especially if you sort of brush up against the capabilities or the guardrails of Sora or OpenAI, for that matter. I don't know. I think it's the world in reverse. I think you should have an opt-in model rather than an opt-out model.
I totally agree with you.
Yeah, it's sort of pushing reality in some Alpens terms almost. I think if you indeed have an indie character and have a proper remuneration model in place, it could open up an interesting additional revenue stream.
Yeah, definitely. No, that's a good point. I think for all of those cases with AI and where it's using content, definitely should be opt in instead of opt out. It's really reverse. It's in the reverse, not how it should be. So Lindsay, would you say that you have faith in OpenAI's plan to remunerate content holders or not really?
I think faith is a strong word. I think that they will open up a revenue share model because they are doing so for content creators with ChatGPT as well. But, you know, is it they're doing it because they want to, or they're doing it because they feel they have to? They're trying to sort of like mitigate lawsuits, because let's not forget the world and his wife are currently suing OpenAI for something, but, you know, with plagiarism, all that kind of thing. And a great example, like I heard recently in a podcast, because obviously a lot of book authors are coming together and trying to sue OpenAI because all of their, you know, their life's work, and the same with journalists, their life's work is being plagiarized by ChatGPT and being summarized. I listened to a podcast and one of the hosts said, "I didn't get a chance to read your book because I asked ChatGPT to summarize it for me." And that's a crying shame, because like his book's been plagiarized, the person hosting couldn't be asked to read it, but he used ChatGPT to summarize it, and now everyone can do that and not buy the book. And that was a great example of kind of the world we're sort of currently sitting in. And I think that the revenue share model, there will be something, but there needs to be kind of a lot of guardrails, a lot of people looking into it and overseeing it to ensure that it is actually reflective of what these rights holders, these content creators actually need and deserve to make it viable for them, is my view.
Yeah.
Yeah. Joris, what are your thoughts on that?
think Spotify, right?
Yeah, I think
the whole remuneration model of Spotify draws a lot of flack these days. I mean, artists are making hardly anything, and I think the risk is there as well that OpenAI, not being a very profitable company, albeit extremely highly valued at this point in time, could use that money firstly themselves before they are actually remunerating people that are, or characters that are available to sort of remix.
Yeah, we'll have to see what happens there. And now let's go in a different direction, looking at China's DeepSeek. So a new report from the US government warns that DeepSeek models pose risks to national security in the US. The evaluation compares DeepSeek models against three OpenAI models and one Anthropic model. According to the US report, DeepSeek's most secure model was on average 12 times more likely than the US models to follow malicious instructions designed to derail them from user tasks. And it also said that DeepSeek models were more likely to give inaccurate and misleading responses on a data set of politically sensitive questions. It suggested that the report could give certain members of Congress sturdier standing in their efforts to ban DeepSeek on government devices. Joris, what do you think of this report's findings? Do you believe there are any genuine risks here for users or to the US's national security? What do you think about this?
I think it really depends who you ask, right? So I looked at the report itself, and even though the standards they apply doing the research seem all very legit, the summary it absolutely isn't. I mean, that's written by the US government. And obviously the US government wants to put DeepSeek sort of on the bad side. So I asked DeepSeek to summarize the report, and obviously it said, no, this is all complete crap. No, it's biased.
I love that.
Yeah, but yeah, no, it's. I think really it's sort of the Cold War on AI, right? The race for arms, and so which side do you choose? Is it OpenAI and therefore the US government you trust with your data, or is it the Chinese government to sort of help you brushing up your email to your boss?
Yeah, US definitely has a vested interest there. Lindsay, what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I didn't read the full report, but I must say, like, I completely agree with Joris here. And I think that the challenge we've got, the US will use this to their advantage politically and use it for a bit of political theatre. They sort of, you know, if that's true about the accuracy of Anthropic and OpenAI over DeepSeek, then that means they are ahead in this perceived Cold War, this arms race, this Cold War, if you like. They're doing pretty well. So actually, whatever DeepSeek concerns there are kind of irrelevant because people are not going to be using DeepSeek. And they are, I think the problem we have in the West is the way that China is perceived. China is perceived a bit as the Wild West when it comes to how data is used and sort of security levels. And, you know, you sit in that part of the world, so you'll have a better understanding of kind of what it's perceived as from sitting in Singapore versus what people have sitting in this part of the world, where the US do a great job of terrifying people and making China sound this really, really, really scary country. But actually, if you look at the examples of like TikTok and Douyin, TikTok is the Wild West. Douyin is not. Now, the reasons Douyin is not because they're trying to protect the safety and security of children, really. But it does do that in that children are not allowed to go near TikTok, whereas in the US and the UK and Europe, TikTok is an absolute minefield and it's being used by children and it's ruined their attention span. But if you look at the way kind of it's managed and the way that the legal aspect and the regulatory aspect of it, of Douyin is managed versus TikTok, actually, you kind of might want to go on the Chinese side a bit in terms of forget their reasons for doing it, which aren't necessarily always the right way because they're doing it for the purpose of the Chinese Communist Party and for kind of promoting the needs of the Chinese Communist Party and kind of the data security of the data usage. But that does make it arguably a bit more secure than what might be happening over here, where kind of things tend to be could have corrected and made safe sort of after the fact, and people tend to try and find legal loopholes more over here than they might do over in Asia and certainly in China. But I think that it's you know, these are genuine kind of measurable technical flaws, but they've been amped up because the US really want to again paint China to be this absolutely terrifying nation that we should all be terrified of.
Yeah, no, I fully agree with you. And even though I think the notion of privacy in China is different than the notion of privacy in, let's say, Europe or the States, mainly Europe, it's just a matter of again, which side do you choose? And so if you draw parallels with TikTok, yeah, sure, maybe the Chinese government can see your version of the Macarena, right? And so the same for DeepSeek. If I ask them what brand of coffee machine I should buy, I mean, really. But you're right. First of all, I think not many people use DeepSeek, so it's much more of an image building, or rather negative image building by the US. And the parallels with TikTok, well, eventually it's just a commercial driver, right? You see that for national safety, TikTok had to be nationalized. Well, really? I mean, we're not even talking about the algorithms behind it. It's just really the ownership and financial ownership. So it makes you think.
It does, because that's basically just Trump carving up TikTok and giving it to his cronies, which is what Putin does with oligarchs, with things that he wants to have control over. That's basically what's happening in the US. It's not for the reasons that they are portraying them as.
Yeah,
absolutely. And do you think we could see DeepSeek becoming a lot more popular in, I guess, here and in UK and US than it is at the moment?
I think it's a losing game, really. And again, it depends on where you look from. So DeepSeek, as well as I think his predecessor Ernie in China, is hugely popular. But also that's the reason is that people need to access a VPN to be able to access OpenAI's or Claude systems. And so there will be Chinese alternatives available that are obviously also trained on Chinese content. So by definition, there is a Chinese bias, right? And so I think we should not confuse that with it being a bad actor or being a bad AI. I don't think that's necessarily true. Also, if you read this report, gone back one step, they never really asked DeepSeek for comments. It was the mighty US saying that DeepSeek is bad. I think that's just I think we need to take it with a grain of salt.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. It's how it's been trained. It's been trained using Chinese data and Chinese content and Chinese scientists and Chinese engineers versus Anthropic and OpenAI, the same thing, but in the US. So actually, it's accurate and fine for them as they need it. It might not work so well for somebody in the US, and maybe it will gain traction. I don't think from a scale perspective, China necessarily needs it to. They will want it to, probably because of this Cold War, but they don't need it to from a scale perspective because they already have that in China and in Asia. And they might want it because it probably just makes them laugh a bit that the Americans get so annoyed about it. But there's no other real reason for them to do so.
Yeah. And I mean, if accuracy and all of that is so important, what about Grok?
So true.
Oh, God. So now that's we're staying on the topic of China, but looking at some regulation in their AI landscape. So in late August, China's Ministry of Industry and Information Technology, together with other agencies, issued draft AI ethics rules for public consultation. The rules apply to all AI research and development and services in China that could affect health and safety, reputation, environment, public order, and sustainability. They require developers and service providers to adhere to principles of fairness, accountability, justice, risk responsibility, respect for life and human dignity. All AI projects falling under the rules must undergo an ethics review. And a major shift followed in September with China's rollout of mandatory AI labeling rules. AI-generated content service providers must now clearly mark AI-generated content, and the responsibility lies with internet platforms to alert users or add implicit labels themselves. Joris, how necessary are these regulations? What do you think?
I think it's a really interesting topic, and I'm a proponent, so I'm much in favor of content authenticity, but I'm not sure if if labeling AI content is the way to go. So I may be an idealist, but I would love for sort of the web to come up with a technology that is able to label authentic content rather than synthetic content. And so you will be able that something is actually authentically created, and therefore you don't have to worry about anything else. Because everything can be fabricated, or everything can be synthetic content these days. You've been playing around with Sora too. I mean, it looks pretty damn real, right?
Yeah.
I wouldn't be able to distinguish real content from synthetic content anymore. I think there are technologies in place. So think NFT, for example. I mean, we use it for the wrong purposes. For, I don't know, a Nyan Nyan cat for $600,000. Who wants to own that thing? But, you know, I think that technology itself can be used to determine authenticity. And there are a few initiatives out there that are already sort of trying that. And big players, big U.S. players, by the way, are already taking part of it. So think Apple, Microsoft, etc. And what it does basically creates sort of a black box for content, and so it will register what cameras it is shot on, if it's been edited, but what software. Not so much who has done it, because you kind of want to keep that anonymous. And I think therefore the parallel to crypto or blockchain or NFTs is quite an interesting one. But if you can see what and who touched it and how it is originated, I think that is really, really interesting. And perhaps even a more feasible long-term approach than having government regulations in place that need to label synthetic content. Because where does it start and where does it stop, right? If I expand my background on an image using Firefly, is that synthetic content? Whereas the majority of content may still be realistic or actual or human. If I use, I don't know, AI grading software, coloring software, does that make my content synthetic? And so I think you open up a whole lot of gray zones that the regulators are always lagging behind. But I think in principle, I agree.
Yeah, there are definitely some gray areas there. Lindsay, what do you think?
I mean, I think I hadn't necessarily considered it from that perspective. So it's very interesting, because it also, you know, asks the question, like, if I have my black background blurred, would that be synthetic versus authentic content, and kind of what the, as you said, Joris, what kind of what the grade levels are of kind of what authentic versus synthetic content is. Because I agree, I'm a proponent, hadn't thought about it from the flip side of actually labeling authentic content rather than synthetic content, because I think that it addresses a genuine problem in that, I mean, I don't know how many of, like, most of our listeners will have received a message from somebody, normally an older relative, going, look at this, like, amazing, this bear bouncing a trampoline. And you had to go, oh, that's AI, I'm sorry, that's not, it's not real, like, that doesn't actually happen. Look, there was one I saw of about 40 rabbits on a trampoline, and straight away I could see rabbits just appearing out of nowhere and kind of coming through solid fences. It's like, how can you not see that? That's clearly the most fake thing ever. But I've become a little bit obsessed with it, and I do follow this guy on Instagram that kind of calls out why a video is AI and what to look out for. So it's become a bit of a kind of a sort of bugbear of mine. But I think that what's going to be interesting about this generally is kind of how it then gets enforced, because obviously China have come out saying we're going to make everybody label everything and be very, very clear on things. And that is very much, again, the Chinese way. Kind of the West might not think of that as being how China operate, but it very much is how China operate, kind of in that with the under the guise of kind of wanting to obviously protect the Chinese Communist Party and the official party line. But what they will then probably do is they will find a couple of major large scapegoats to then make sure that everyone toes the line and everybody enforces that rule. Whereas what happens in the US is we will typically kind of lawyer our way around regulations and then test boundaries until they're explicitly stopped. And even then, probably not properly stopped. Even then, there might be a 3-year long court case before something actually happens. And even then it doesn't happen, then a million class action lawsuits. they can nip that in the bud quite quickly in China by just going, right, we're making this happen. You have to like comply or it's the end of your operations. And so I think that that's a, it'd be interesting to see kind of how that plays out, because I assume it will be very effective. And I also assume if the same thing were to happen over here in the West, it wouldn't be quite as effective. Like even already Sora, any content, as you mentioned, Joris, has a Sora watermark on it. I've already seen lots of videos where they've just, people have been able to blur the watermark. It's still, if you're looking for it, you can see the site blurring where the watermark would be. Most people wouldn't notice it. And again, most people wouldn't notice the rabbits literally appearing out of a solid wall. And they'll still think it's real. Yeah, exactly. So I think that it addresses a genuine problem, but it's not something that is going to be as effective in many parts of the world as it might well be in China. And I don't know how we fix that, because Joris, you make a really, really good point, which is how do we actually define that? And, you know, you've got like Twitter X, the blue ticks, that was kind of an authentic person versus a different type of account. But even within that, authentic person could be posting something that's inauthentic or synthetic, or it could be half synthetic. It could be kind of me, but I might have like my face like auto-tuned or cleaned up a bit or whatever. There's a lot of different ways that that could be interpreted, and a lot of interpretations of what synthetic versus authentic means. And I think that Joris, actually, you kind of made things maybe more complicated than they already were in my head. So thank you. Lots to think about there.
You're welcome. But I think this may just work for Chinese content in China because of the limited amount of ecosystems. And so also I think Chinese content doesn't necessarily travel very far outside of China. And so sure, maybe. But then again, I think international borders are fading. Content doesn't need to stick to any place. It's quickly becoming global, right? And so if you don't come up with a global or sort of state independent solution, we may not be able to nip this problem in the bud.
Yeah. So Joris, do you think we need to see more different types of regulations in each place, like in each country?
I don't think that's the solution, really. Because again, if I publish something here in Singapore, it will be consumed, I don't know, easily being consumed in the UK or in the US. Which regulation do I follow, right? And I think we're not the shining example of easy agreements between nations. So I think there might be a best practice at best. But I think, you know, we have technology that can help us here. So let's just use it for once for good.
Yeah, no. I agree with you. I think going back to the TikTok Douyin example, if in China companies are forced to label things clearly and be very, very explicit about that, I can't see them voluntarily doing that and implementing similar transparency rules if they were to do the same thing in the US, for example, or Europe, unless they're legally required to. And like I've already said, like the legal requirement there is kind of not quite as enforced or harsh as it is in China. So they wouldn't bother. They would comply when they're forced to do so and not before.
Yeah. Lindsay, do you think we could see other major markets introduce similar measures anytime soon?
I think they sort of are. I think that certainly they're looking into it. Like, you know, we're already seeing some laws in and some regulations in Europe around this, around kind of labeling content. But I think that as we often see with things that like AI that move so very, very quickly, that governments and regulators cannot keep up with it. And this, I think, is ringing, from what I can see, ringing very true here. It's going to be very, very difficult to keep up with. And that as soon as they manage to enforce, like bring out a regulation that takes ages to actually kind of get through the red tape and get everything agreed and ratified, as soon as they've done that, AI is developed again. And the regulation that they've just managed to enforce is no longer relevant. So I think that there's going to be need to be a lot of governments working together to kind of understand what is being developed in each of those markets and what can apply, because at the moment it really seems like a bit of a minefield.
Yeah, absolutely. Innovation is just speeding ahead at the moment. Regulation is so far behind.
Yeah.
We should stop it.
Exactly.
Yeah. Well, I think that's a good note to finish on. Thanks so much, Joris, for joining us. It was great to have your insights.
And thank you for having me. It was really nice. Thanks.
Thank you,
Joris. Thank you, Lindsay.
Thank you. This has been fun.
Thanks for listening. Tune in again next week.
You've been listening to the MadTech Podcast, brought to you by ExchangeWire.